Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and germs, gentlemen and females, gentlewomen, maybe perhaps, maybe just, yes. Welcome to another edition of Blue Shirt Banner Radio. My name is Eddie the Mouth Geike. I was born and bred in Hollis, Queens, at the age of one, and then I moved out to Queens and then Long Island. Oh, good. And I've been stuck here ever since. But what does that have to do with anything? It's just a little background on who one half of probably the best internet radio team that has ever graced your computers. My partner, of course, is the fantabulous master of infotainment, Mr. Jim Schmiedeberg. And Jim, how you doing tonight, my friend?
Oh, it's just been a great fucking day, let me tell you.
The language so quick.
Yeah, I'm gonna start. Yeah, I'm right. Yeah, right off the bat tonight.
I'm sorry to hear that. But you know, we must press on. We must succeed where others have failed. We must provide the Ranger fan with the info and the entertainment that they so need.
Yes, we must. No, I'm here.
Okay. And the chat room is filling up like a bordello at lunchtime. And we got the people coming in. Wow. Tonight, Jim, tell them who we have, Jim.
In about 15 minutes, we have the great Emil Francis joining us once again. And as we've said before, if there is such a thing as Ranger royalty, Emil Francis sits at the head of the table. And then, as always, we like to surprise Emil. And tonight is no exception. We will be joined by former New York Ranger defenseman Rod Sealing, also
yeah.
Hosted the Twilight Zone.
Yes.
And he's well known for that. You know what? Hold on a second. I gotta stop this for a second. Okay, Mandar, I fucking get it. Okay, I've heard about this Jaromir Jagr thing all fucking day. Okay. Yes, I chose Jaromir Jagr in the fucking Puck Daddy Mount Puck War. And you know what? I heard about it all goddamn day, including getting a goddamn death threat on fucking Twitter. Okay? Let's get the fuck over it. It's just hockey. Okay? Seriously, people. I mean, you know what? I try and have a thick skin about this shit, but let's get realistic. Okay? And yes, Mandar, I could have been more wrong because I could have put Wade Redden or Marek fucking Malik or Sandis Ozilinch. So there are worse choices than Jaromir Jagr, okay? I tried to put somebody from different eras of Ranger hockey, and all those fucking idiots on Puck Daddy who were bashing me because I didn't put Adam Graves and Mike Richter. Well, there's more to the New York fucking Rangers than 1994, okay? So I'm a little pissed off tonight, so excuse me. But I heard about it all day. You don't like my picks? Tough. I what else? Well, you know, whatever. I'll get over it. But I heard about it all fucking day. I had emails, Twitter, you know, whatever. It's just like fucking get over it. It's just fucking hockey. And that's not just directed at Mandar. That's directed at all the people that Twittered me all day long. Emailed.
How these people.
So whatever. We'll survive this. Somebody said, "Oh, I now doubt your credibility." When the fuck did I have credibility?
Credibility.
I'm some fat guy sitting on my patio in 112 degree heat trying to put together a Ranger radio program. Where's my credibility? In Phoenix. So, it's been a bad day.
Okay. Get it all out. I want it all out there. I want you to vent. You know, I had my you got to stay away from these people behind computers. All of a sudden, they're all tough and they all say this stuff. Just relax. Don't worry about it. I mean, I don't want to rub it in, but I told you Yark was a bad chick last week. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, you did. You disagree. That's fine.
No,
I don't have a problem. I don't have a no. Wait, I don't have a problem with people that disagree with me. But I mean, you're an idiot. You're an asshole. You're an embarrassment to Ranger fans. You've lost your credibility. Your website sucks. You suck. You should fucking die. I would kill you for putting that. I mean, are you fucking serious? Excuse my language tonight. I gotta get this out before we get emailed on the phone.
Just completely. I mean, this is like the Hiroshima of F bombs. Go ahead.
No, it's like Jimmy Dice Clay over here. But you know what? It's like ridiculous. You're not Frosty. You're not fat. You're plump. Thank you, Frosty. We gotta start. We like. Yeah, I'm trying to work my way down. I'm trying to work my way down to chubby.
It's like that Don Myrera bit. You big bone. Yeah, it's funny how that bone hangs over your belt, Benny. Yeah, you know, it's okay. It's, you know, listen, I get called. Hey, listen, I took a lot of heat from my certain predictions, you know. But, yeah, the people go overboard on the Internet. We all know this.
Oh, and then some moron says, how could you put Frank Boucher up there instead of Wayne Gretzky?
Huh?
I mean, all Frank Boucher did was help the Rangers win 3 cups.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous. No matter who I put up there, somebody would have bitched, so who fucking cares?
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, you roll with the punches. That's what I've learned to do with. I get a lot of jabs and the whole thing and the whole bit. I wanted to maybe to divert from...
I'm done with F-bombs, by the way. That's it. No more out of me tonight. I've had my rant. I only rant. I rant like once every 2 months. That's it. I'm done.
Yeah. I'm usually the one who's off the rails. Well, you know, I took a look at to change the subject. the top 100 salary cap hits for next season and their 2009-10 stat ranks. I took a look at this chart, and their stats are based on points and their position. So if you are ranked, if you're Alex Ovechkin, you're ranked with forwards and in total points. You know, Ovechkin is the most highest – well, he gets the most highest cap hit for next season at 9.5, okay? And last year, for example, he was tied for second in points. So you go down the list, you know. I mean, I know everything isn't based on total points. I see Henrik Lundqvist. He's got 6.875 in his cap hit. He was 8th in goals against. Okay, all right. Well, figuring, you know, the guys he plays in front of, you know. You got Wade Redd, he could have finished 2nd or 1st. We didn't have him on the team. So I'm looking down there. And even Scott Domez. You know, everybody's saying what a success in Montreal. I know I'm a little bit of a Gomez detractor. But Gomez, he got 7... A little bit. Gomez cap hit for next year is 7.3, and he was tied for 54th in scoring. Okay, that's not too good. And then I am looking around, and then I see Chris Drury, $7 million, tied for 187th.
Wait. 187th.
There wasn't anybody. There really was not anybody worse. Sean Horcroft of Edmonton was tied for 161st, and he made five. He's going to make 5.5 this year. So he's the only other bum I could find close. That's amongst forwards. That's not amongst everybody. That's just forwards. So then I'm going down. You know where I'm going now. I get down to Wade Redden, whose cap hit is 6.5. Yes, that's $6,500,000. This is amongst defensemen. Just defensemen. Based on last year's stats, tied for 128th. Joke about it all the time.
All we can do is laugh. Ladies and gentlemen, your 2010 New York Rangers. He's going to love Hartford.
I hope he's got to go. He's got to go. Oh, Lord. Hey, look, some of these guys making...
Jesus, what the fuck? Sorry.
What's going on over there tonight? It's a total debacle over there.
It's very, very windy here tonight, and there's shit's just blowing everywhere. I'm sorry. All right. I'm good. I'm good, really.
Okay, all right, all right. And then, I don't know. I just looked at it, and I couldn't believe it. And the Rangers have, like, four guys that are in, like, this top, I guess, three. Now they have four because they have Gaborik, who was 10th in the league in scoring at 7.5. So, you know, that's the deal. So that's my my little thing. I mean, I'm not telling the Ranger fans anything they don't know, but again, it just shows you we got guys that they're not just the worst in our conference and our division. They're the worst in the league, like the worst bang for your buck guys, so to speak, in the league. In the league.
It's bad. It's bad.
It's bad, Batman. You got that right.
It's bad. It's bad.
So, tonight, like we said, in about 5 minutes or so, Eddie Jockerman's going to join us. Eddie Jockerman?
He is?
What the
Eddie Jockerman?
I saw Eddie Jockerman in the chat room.
Eddie Jockerman? Oh, we
Eddie
finally
surprise,
got him
yes.
on the show.
I mean, Emil Francis, he was a goaltender. Emil, he'll be on the show along with Rod Steeling. And Rod Steeling's a guy that he flew under the radar. He's before my time. Let's face it, his first game as a Ranger was a year before I was born. So, but Rod was part of a very, very controversial trade in which Andy Bathgate was traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we all know that Andy's number is retired in MSG, and justifiably because he was such a great Ranger. But that was a big-time trade, and hopefully I get to talk to Rod about that. And Emil, we've got a lot of questions to fire at Emil. I've got my own. I know Jim's got a lot. I know that... Well, we know Emil is very opinionated and always gives us the direct answer, doesn't skirt the issues. Now, Jim, are you going to be a little bit more, I don't know, yeah. You show a little bit more decorum when Emil shows up? Or is this going
to I'm fine. I just had to rant. That's all I told you. Once every couple of months, I have to let it out. It's out. I'm fine. Serenity now. Real quick before we get Emil on the phone, I'm going to tell you guys about two quick things. First thing is Friday, November 26th, mark the date at the Poynton, I think it's called Poynton, Poytin Still in Hackensack, New Jersey. We are going to do a blue shirt banner / blue shirt banner radio / whatever viewing party, whatever you want to call it. I will be there. Eddie's going to be there. The wives are going to be there. The kids are going to be there. Mine. And maybe, I don't know if you have, maybe my son will come up. And so we're all going to be there. We're going to have a good time. The fun's going to start at about 5 o'clock. We're going to do a live radio show right there in the bar. Then we're going to watch the Rangers play the Panthers down in Florida. So I hope you guys can make it. It's the day after Thanksgiving, so I know a lot of you will be off work. It's in Hackensack. We tried to make it centrally located. It's about 40 miles from Long Island. It's about 15 minutes from the city. So I think it's a good spot to be, and that's where we're going to be. So we'll keep talking about it as we get closer. It should be a lot of fun, and we hope to see you guys there. We're going to have some stuff to give away. Whatever. We'll have all kinds of we'll have stuff, and we'll have a good time. Now, one other thing. For those of you that follow the papers every day, you might or might not have noticed that Michael Obenauer is gone from the Daily News, and he has been replaced. You know, I think Mike was okay. I think he was kind of put in a bad position there, and I think he was either kind of thrown to the wolves or I don't know what the deal was, but he seemed a little handcuffed, and I'm kind of wondering if his departure had anything to do with the story that he told me at the draft about when he wrote that article about the 10 years of mistakes of the Sather era, and then 2 days later, when Sather wanted to talk to the press, they ignored Obenauer, and I wonder if that had something to do with his departure from the Daily News. But anyway, he has been replaced by Mr. Jesse Spector, and I reached out to Jesse today with an email, and he got back to me. I invited him to come on the show and kind of introduce himself to Ranger fans, and I told him what we do, and he made a point of, in his first post on the Daily News, that he mentioned how, you know, he wants to cover the Rangers as best he can because there's no sports talk coverage for the Rangers in New York. So I figured that's where we came in, and I introduced myself and congratulated him on getting the job. And his reply was, thanks for the congratulations and the invite. I'm really excited to take over the beat. And I've read Blue Shirt Banner a bit as I familiarize myself more with the lay of the land on covering the Rangers. The transition on being an all-sports guy with a focus on baseball to being a straight-up hockey guy. You guys do a nice job. I'll be glad to come on the show and talk, but I think I need to settle in a bit before I can talk with any kind of assurance that I won't make an ass out of myself. Like that ever stops anybody on this show. Given that you probably don't want to wait 5 years for an interview, a couple of weeks should do. I look forward to actually starting to cover stuff and look forward to speaking with you. Thanks again, Jesse. So Mr. Spector will join us in the coming weeks, maybe before training camp. We'll catch up with him as he eases into the job. But it's nice to know he's reading Blue Shirt Banner to familiarize himself with day-to-day goings-on of the Rangers, right?
Yeah. Well, I think he's going to – he's a young guy, and I think he's from the blogosphere, so to speak. I like it. But I got a feeling he's going to, you know, they're going to work him over pretty good over there. And, but he seems like a really nice guy. I can't wait to talk to him. And, I will lend my services if I have to maybe perhaps tutor the young gentleman in
Ranger
hockey. Because I'm an egotistical bastard.
Mario, I think to answer your question, He knows hockey, but I don't think he's particularly covered hockey, and I just think the newspapers are hurting, and you know they don't want to spend a lot of money and they don't want to hire guys with hockey experience. You know, not for nothing, but some of these older guys that are hanging around and you know, like maybe a guy from Newsday or you know specifically, you know, if they like. They're going to have a hard time finding work at a newspaper if they're cut loose, because the newspaper he's going to have to settle for a lot less than what he's making now. So you know, I just think they're looking to get these guys as inexpensively as they can. And look, you know, the guy he's a sports guy. He knows hockey. I think he'll be fine. It's just, you know, once he gets his feet wet, Tortorella yells at him, he'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll be thinking, oh, what's this stick boy doing here in the press room? Throw him out. I think Jesse will do a good job, and I wish all the best. And well, you know, listen, it takes a while, and fans are not going to be easy on him because it just, you know how it is. You found out today they're pit bull these lunatics.
They
say anything
suck.
That doesn't. Yeah, well, today no, they don't. Those people death threat you. That's stupid. I mean,
that just set me off, and you know, it's like. I can, you know, I'm used to being called an idiot. I've been married twice, and you know, whatever. I get over it, you know. But just shit like that, there's no need for it. Anyway, I'm gonna go get Emil on the phone. We got Robbie's on hold, and I doubt very highly that Robbie's on hold to talk to Emil. So, do you want to talk to Robbie, or do we want to just tell Robbie that we'll talk to him next week?
I'll talk to Robbie, but then you'll have to dump him once we get Emil.
Okay. All right. Here, I'm gonna hold on. Let me bring Robbie. Robbie, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on?
All right, listen. You're going to talk to Eddie while I go get Emil Francis, and then when I come back with Emil Francis, I'm going to have to cut you off, okay?
No problem. Go ahead.
All right, so keep Eddie company, and I'll talk to you guys in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Robbie
okay.
G., right. What's up? What's
nothing
going
much.
On?
Nothing much. What's going on with Jim tonight? I don't think I've ever heard him this angry.
Well, once again, if you put yourself out there in any kind of media, you're going to get ostracized. But the internet, it's like you get all these lunatics and people just want to get under your skin. You know how it goes. Yeah.
What is Puck Daddy? Like, he picked his favorite, like, team or something. Like, what happened? Like, why, what with Yonder?
Well,
like, what is...
Well, what happened was this: Puck Daddy went to all the bloggers of each hockey team, the ones that he holds in self-esteem, and he said that, if you could pick them out, Puckmore, of people for your franchise, pick those guys, four guys. And so Jim picked them. One was Yager, and a lot of Ranger fans got upset about that. I wanted to ask you, you messaged me on Facebook, we'll get this in quick, you said, I actually have been following a little bit of basketball. I heard it on today on SNN.
Hey, there you go, and I'm just kidding, I don't care if you like it, if you get into them, you get it, I'm just busting your chops,
all right?
But that's good, speaking of things.
I just want to guide you, because I'm here, I'm your hockey guidance counselor, the way I look at it. And this is what I want you to do. I want you to pay attention to the Traverse City tournament. And do you know what that is?
Vaguely, yeah. But I'm just right now, I'm gone, sir.
Oh, no. What do you want to talk about? I mean,
it's still baseball season. I'm focused on the Mets, which is killing me. It's like from one Mets to another. You go from the Mets, and then during the fall, you go to the Rangers, which is another Mets, and then it's just awful.
Yeah, well, you know that.
All right, Bobby. Robbie, you gotta let go of the Mets, buddy. You gotta let go of the Mets.
No, I stick with them. I stick with them to thick and thin.
All right, well, listen, we'll talk to you next week, all right?
All right, no problem. Tell Emil I said hello, okay?
All right, we will.
All right, Eddie, why don't you welcome Emil to the show for us?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my extreme pleasure to... Welcome, probably, I think, he is Ranger royalty, the king of the Casbah, the prince of hockey and Ranger knowledge, as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Emil Francis to the program. Welcome, Emil, and good evening.
Real nice being with you. In fact, I was just watching the Yankees play.
You're like Robbie, our previous caller. He can't give up on the Mets, even though it looks pretty bad. But that's
that right.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, New York fans, you know it, Emil. They were diehard through thick and thin.
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. I can always remember a 10-year period there in New York when I was there, and CBS owned the Yankees. And I'll tell you, they had a tough time for those 10 years. It wasn't until George Steinbrenner came along that it turned the franchise back to where they should have been all those years.
Yeah, I mean,
that's right, People forget how bad the Yankees were for a long time.
Yes, sir, boy. Elson Howard, they all went out at the same time. Bobby Richardson, Tony Kubek, and then center field, of course, Mickey Mantle, and they lost a hole right down the middle of their lineup. And if that happens in baseball or hockey, you're dead.
That's true.
Now, Emil, while we are on the baseball thing, and we all know that you're a big baseball guy, you're second baseman, right, I think? Second baseman or shortstop?
I was a shortstop.
Now, is it true that they used to have major tournaments all over Western Canada back in the day, featuring
exactly.
NHLers?
Exactly.
In that?
See, there were only about Bill Gadsby and myself, Bert Olmsted, Doug Bentley, Max Bentley. We were pretty well the only guys from the nation. Gordie Howe came in there. I was playing for Saskatoon, and about 2 months into the season, Jack Adams found out he was playing on baseball in Western Canada, and he told him, "You're out of there. No more baseball for you." And he stopped him from playing. But when we left Chicago at the end of the season, Bill Tobin was the general manager, and Doug Bentley, Max Bentley, and myself, we weren't big guys, and he called us all in. And he said, "I know you guys play a lot of baseball out there, but he said, I don't want you to play too much." And, of course, Doug Bentley was the spokesman. "Oh, don't worry, Bill. We won't play too much." Well, that summer started May the 15th to September the 15th. We played 125 games. We didn't play too much. But what happened, I played, they hired me to come to play in Delisle. They hired Bert Olmsted and myself. and two black players. And then I went back to North Belle where I originally came from because they wanted me to come back to be the playing manager, which I was 24 at the time, and I did. And I got contact with Emil DeVasi, who was the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers. And each spring, I'd go down to Vero Beach, and whatever I needed, he told me, in fact, he said, I can give you a busload of players. Oh, no, no. I said, I just need three or four. And anyway, we won 7 championships in 10 years when I was managing that club, and I had some good ball players I had picked up from there. And also, I picked up 4 guys from the Kansas City Monarchs, you know, in the Colored League. Yeah, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, well, then all of a sudden, teams like Kansas City and Indianapolis, so they folded up like the whole league folded up, in fact.
And
a lot of them came out to play.
I was going to say, I talked to a friend of mine, Mike Wyman, and he said that a lot of black ball players went up north during the pre-integration era, and some of the games ended in riots. Do you have any recollection of that?
No, well, we had a riot, but the riot we had, I had like, I always had 7 or 8 black players play for me. And we were playing against a team called the Flora Cubans. They're all imported from Florida. And we were playing in a town called Rosetown, Saskatchewan. And the winner was going to get 2,000. The second place team was going to get 1,000. You want me to finish the story?
Yeah,
so we got
sure.
into the fourth.
Of course.
We got into the fourth inning. And Mike Kitch's name was Louis Green. And he went into second base and the ball hit to the shortstop. Instead of sliding in to break up the double play, he ran into the second baseman. And he knocked him down. Well, with that, all the Cuban players left the field, and they ran to the third base side of the field, and all grabbed baseball bats. Well, you never seen anything like that in your life, I'll tell you. I had 4 guys with baseball bats. I had a bunch of guys with baseball bats. And Jackie McLeod, who played for the Rangers, also was playing for me. He was a real good ball player. He was a left-hand pitcher. And all of a sudden, I see all these guys coming towards me, and McLeod was standing beside me with a baseball bat. I went to grab the bat. Oh, that's my bat. Well, fortunately for me, they ran right past me because I had a third baseman by the name of Curtis Tate, who's also black. And evidently, he'd been coming out, walking out to the field after his buddy broke up the double play with a bat in his hand. And that's why the Cubans all left the field. Well, then the race was on. Well, my player, who Tate, the first Cuban near him, he hit him over the head with a baseball bat, then he took off. And he ran down the third baseline, and he ran through the crowd, through the stands, and then he took off through the parking lot, and I could see three Cubans chasing him, so I took off. Well, needless to say, they left me in the dust. But before it all ended, I ran to these three Cubans in a bush, because there's a bush in the highway, and here the three of them got these bats. Well, I'll tell you, fortunately for me, a couple of my players come up also behind. But two other Cubans went down the highway, and they went into there was an elevator in a farmhouse. They went in the farmhouse, and my guy got in there first, and he grabbed the knife, and he ran up to the elevator. And the elevator man grabbed the shotgun, told his son to get a rifle, and they went into the house like, unfortunately for Tate, he was in there, and these two guys were there to protect them, and up come the three Cubans outside. Well, right behind them, up come the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and then up came me. So you never seen such a bizarre situation in all your life. Well, finally, they got Tate, they arrested my player, took him to jail. The rest of us, two of the Cubans, myself, and 3 or 4 of my players, we all went back to the ballpark, and we resumed the game. And we finished the game in the tournament. But after the game, I had to go down to the jail to get my player out of jail. And we had to head for a town called Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. We're playing the next day. So anyway, I'm driving. Tate's in my car. We used to travel in 5 cars, 4 players to a car, and I was driving. And I turned to Curtis Tate. And I had seen him when he was running down the highway when I was trying to catch up to all these guys, and he had a baseball spike in either hand. So I said to Curtis, Curtis, what the heck were you running down that highway with your spikes in your hand? He said, man, I didn't want nothing to slow me down. And it did. That's probably the story you heard.
That's the one I heard. You got it.
That's the one, I'll tell you. And,
you didn't hear it told that well, though.
No.
I was in a lot of riots in hockey and fisticuffs, what have you, but I had never seen one like that, I'll tell you.
Now, what year was this about?
I'd say that'd be about 1953, 54, 55.
So this was like a Cuban crisis before the real Cuban crisis.
That's right. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is when, you know, Washington had a lot of Cubans. Oh, yeah. They were able to come into the country, no problem at all, like, you know. In fact, it wasn't funny, I'll tell you. But wherever we went, you know, oh, I got to tell you this story. This guy really caught me. He was a very good sports writer. He also had his own show on radio. So the next day we had to play a doubleheader in Moose Jaw. We played an afternoon game, and on the way to Moose Jaw, this guy got on the radio at 11 o'clock at night, and he said, there was another riot out in Rosetown today, and who does this Francis think he is causing these riots? They should kick him and that ball club and run him right out of the country. And Curtis Tate should go with him. That's the guy that hit the guy in the head with the bat. Well, we played an afternoon game, and Tate went 5 for 5. So right after the game, it was a split doubleheader. I went down to the railway station. I sent a telegraph. His name was Bill Cameron. I said, Bill Cameron, if you're going to run Tate out of the country, you better run him out fast. He just went 5 for 5 today. So now we're playing at 7 o'clock at night. 6 o'clock, a little guy comes up on a bicycle. He's a guy delivering telegrams, and he's saying, Mr. Francis, Mr. I said, that's me. So he comes over, he hands me this telegram. I open it up, and it's from my friend Bill Cameron, the guy who said it should run us all over the country. He said, oh, the 5 hits that Tate got, how many are in the hospital? Real good comeback. He was sharp, that guy.
Now, Emil, we had one of your former guys on last week. Ron Greshner was on the show with us.
Great, great guy. I'll tell you. There's a story behind him too.
Well, hold it. Before you get to it, he told us. We asked him if he had a story about you.
Yeah.
And he told us a story, and we pulled the clip, and I want you to hear this. And then he says you'll remember this. So I'm gonna.
Right.
So listen to this.
Okay.
Back there, he couldn't get anybody to get playing defense. He needed to score goals.
Ron, I have one last question for you. Okay. We're gonna have Emil Francis is coming back on the show next week. He's been on a couple of times with us,
yep.
And he's always good at spinning stories about players and guys that he knows. Do you have a good Emil Francis story that maybe we could spring on him when he's on with us?
Absolutely, this is gonna be one that he'll remember this too, because
he remembers everything.
He doesn't. Oh yeah. Oh no.
He doesn't forget anything.
This guy's like as sharp as a tack, man. I only hope I live that long just to be even half that sharp. And it was my first year, I think, in the league, Derek Sanderson, Middleton, and myself were in the city, and these other guys lived out in Long Beach, so they were a party out. Hello.
Hello. That's just a warning that we're all about that.
Okay. And so they had this. So anyway, they had this party out in Long Beach. They got into a little bit of whatever, just the cuffs in the bar, and there was some stuff going on, and blah blah blah. And then the police called the cat and all this stuff. And so then, next day in the locker room, he's there and he's like, oh, you guys are all out drinking and doing this stuff and the whole thing, right? So I'm sitting there, and I'm going. He's going, where were you? I was playing Monopoly last night. He throws his wallet on the floor. He goes, I'll bet you weren't. And Derek Sanderson goes, yeah, he was. I was playing with him. And so was Middleton. We were in the city playing Monopoly. The other guys were all drinking in the bar and got caught. We were like, Cat goes, okay, give me back my wallet. I was sitting there going in my brain. I'm going,
yeah.
Whatever he has in there, he bet me that. I want to raise him, you know. I like poker. I want to raise him. He remembers that, don't he? Oh my God!
Probably does.
Oh yeah. Like you said, he remembers that.
Yes, I remember.
You remember that story?
Yes, yes, yes.
I heard you laughing when he was.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
So you really threw down your wallet and said, "I bet you."
Yeah. Yep, I did. Well, you know, it was a funny story. Funny story how we got him. We had a 17-year-old draft. Just for the 1 year, and in order to take a guy in the 17-year-old draft, you had to take him with your first pick. Well, Ron, at that time, it was a 20-year-old draft. And what had happened, the World Hockey, you know, was starting to come along, so we had to try to figure out that they couldn't take all the young players ahead of us, so we had to do that. Well, anyway, we had Dave Maloney rated right up there, too, but in order to get Dave Maloney, he was 17 years old, we had to take him in the first round. So a month before the draft, the World Hockey were going to operate out of Vancouver, British Columbia. And the Canucks were there, of course, but they were going to be in the World Hockey. And Greschner had played for New Westminster. That was his junior team. Well, about a month ago, before the draft, I started a rumor, and it got around real quick, that Greschner had signed with New Westminster, or pardon me, with Vancouver. And it made sense because, you know, he played out there for 3 years. Geez, now I've got my fingers crossed. So we go into the draft, and bingo, we take Dave Maloney in the first round. And then we go 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down along the list. And here we come to number 21, second round, and guess what? There's Ron Greschner.
Yeah, yeah.
I grab Ron Greschner. Well, needless to say, Dave Maloney and Ron Greschner were two great defensemen with the Rangers for many, many years. But we were so lucky that that worked out for us. And a little white lag got Ron Greschner.
Yeah.
That's not a bad 1-2 punch there in that draft.
No, it's not bad. That was the best draft we ever had as far as defensemen, I'll tell you.
And we got
Brad Park in the draft, but we got one. We got Brad, but there we got two. We were very lucky.
Wow.
Now, did you know Ron's dad or one of his coaches
yes.
in juniors?
Oh, I knew his dad. His dad, he came from Good Soil, Saskatchewan, which was about 100 miles from where I was running a ball club in North Ballard. And I went up there they were honoring a priest who was a real good friend of mine. And I went up there on the Sunday, and that's when I first met Ron, and I met his dad and his mother and his sister. And Ron Greschner's dad, I think, owned the whole town. He was a car dealer, but he owned the post office, he owned the store. He was a mayor. He owned that town, I think. Real nice man.
Oh, that's such a great story. I mean, you know, you went all the way. I just love those stories when people actually met face-to-face and you met the families and everything like that.
Yeah.
And I think even Ron said maybe, because you were known for this, you would circulate fake rumors about guys being hurt just so you could grab them in the draft. You know, they'd say, oh, it's... I don't know.
Yeah.
His leg is a little iffy. We don't know, you know, and that's so great. And I got to tell you, the cat, man, you really nailed two really solid NHL defensemen. I mean, how many drafts get two quality defensemen like that? One and
oh,
two.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, we got Brad Park in the draft. But, I mean, he was one and one only. I mean, and we were very fortunate there. We got Park. But, I mean, in this case here, we got two real good defensemen, like, you know. So we were lucky.
Two guys that were both captains of the Rangers.
Right.
I mean, how often do you see that in a draft?
That's right. And you know the thing was that Ron Greschner came in his rookie season, and I'll tell you, he looked as if he'd been in the league all his life. He played great, played very good. Put him right on the power play, fit right in. I mean, you could see, you know, that this guy was going to be a real good defenseman, which he turned out to be. I think that he's a all-star, not all-star. I mean, he's a Hall of Fame candidate for me. He was that good.
Well, we certainly think that he deserved to have his number up in the rafters. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
He definitely
does. Great player.
I mean, if you think about how long he played for the Rangers, and he was a versatile guy. They moved him up on the wing at times. Just a tremendous hockey player and a tremendous guy for New York City, too. You know.
Yes, he was. Absolutely. Yeah. I agree.
Emil, I had another question something I want to ask you about. We talked to Rick Carpinello a couple weeks ago from the Low Hud blogs, and he was talking about how when he used to cover the Rangers full-time, like back in the 80s, how the players had, you know, relationships with the media, and how that hasn't happened, that doesn't happen anymore. The players... they just don't have friendships like they used to with the media. Was that something in your day when you were coaching? Were the guys real close with the media guys and the beat reporters?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, and, the reporters at that time, maybe they still do, I don't know, but they used to travel right with the team, like, you know. And, I think that, sure, they had to report the games and what have you, but by the same token, I think that they were hoping the Rangers would win, because I think I made their job easier, like, you know. Talking about that, you know, I'll never forget, we got snowed in New York. We're supposed to leave, I got to think for a minute. We went from practice right over the airport, and Kennedy Airport, and we were there waiting, and about 4 o'clock, they said the flight's canceled. So I had to call the bus company, and they said, we'll send a bus right out there, which they did. So everybody's loaded up on the bus, like, you know. So I always was the last one to get on the bus. Get it all on, the equipment's now packed underneath, and everybody goes on, the trainers first. Now I walk on, and I look. In the first seat where I always sat, I look, and here's a woman sitting there. And I go like this to the bus drivers, come on outside, I want to talk to you. So I bring him outside, and I said, is that woman in that bus, where's she going? Well, she's going with me. I says, go with you where? He's we're going to Montreal, and she's going to come with me. That's my wife. And I know he was BSing, like, there's no more his wife than mine. I said, she looks too young to be your wife, so don't give me that crap. I said, in the meantime, I said, get her off the bus. So he said, well, would you mind, he says, if I took her to the Midtown Tunnel, and I'll let her off there, and I'll get her, send her home by cab. I said, fine. She can ride as far as the Midtown Tunnel, and that's it. Okay, we pull up in front of the Midtown Tunnel, and the bus is still running. He says, sir, grab your suitcase, and she reached up, grabbed her bag, and the two of them went, like, you know. So we're sitting there. We're sitting there. I'll bet you for 20. Now I'm getting nervous because we got to get to Montreal, like, you know. So I go outside the bus. I'm walking up and down the street. I don't see anybody. And funny, there's a bar there. I walk in the bar to look around. I made this guy get in the bar, like, you know. And the guy behind the bar recognized, hey, Cat, what are you doing in here? I said, I'm looking for a bus driver. Oh, he says, there was a bus driver and a woman in here about 15 minutes ago. And they called the cab, and they both left in the cab. Can you believe that, sir? I go back to the bus. Christ's sake, I don't even know. No, none of us knew how to even turn the bus off. He let it running, like, you know. So now I phoned the bus company. I said, what's going on here? You sent this driver, and he marooned us here. We're at the Lincoln Tunnel, and we're at the Midtown Tunnel. We got to get to Montreal. He said, oh, don't get excited. Don't get excited. He says, that driver's a kook. Nice, sending a kook to take us to Montreal. So now he said, just stay there. He said, I'll have another bus there within 30 minutes. So now this guy comes. I'm telling you, he was wearing dark glasses. He had a big pair of gloves. And he had a carton of cigarettes, and he smoked that whole carton, I think, between the Midtown Tunnel and Montreal. We got in Montreal at 4 o'clock in the morning. He turned to me, and we're all getting off the bus. He says, I'm going to wait here overnight, he says, to take you back. I says, I'll tell you what you do. You turn that bus on, go right back to New York. We're not going back in that bus. And we didn't, but guess what? We got snowed in again going back to New York, so now I had to get a bus to Montreal to take us to New York. And we drove all night to get back to New York. So we had, that was a nice trip Saturday and Sunday, I'll tell you. Anyway, who's on the bus? All the writers and Jerry Eskenazi from the New York Times wrote up the whole story of what had happened. And he followed it up, and the bus driver never ever went back to work. That was it. I think that the story broke, and he had the guy's name and the whole thing. I think the guy was married. And I think his wife found out that guy may never ever have lived again. He may not even survive that trip. And we're lucky we survived. We tied in Montreal, we come back to New York, we beat Montreal in New York, we took 3 out of 4 points. So that was a long weekend.
Oh, Lord.
Now, Emil, you followed this year's hockey, right? You are you watched the Cup.
Yep.
You're right on top of things. Can you?
Yeah.
Because last we left you, I think it was right before the playoffs. And
right.
Come on, how hard were you rooting against the Flyers? I have to know.
Oh, are you kidding? Are you kidding? Bob Pulfer, of course, belongs to our golf club down here, like, you know, and he was going back to the playoffs for the finals, and I says, Pulley, whatever the hell you do, you tell those guys, you tell those Blackhawks, they better beat that Philadelphia. God, that's the last outfit I wanted to see win, believe me. They did.
Yeah.
I was glad they did.
And Emil, you've said on the show before how much you hate the shootout. It must have killed you like the rest of us to see the Rangers season come down to a shootout.
I couldn't believe that. Like, you know, and I hate that shootout. I never liked that. Well, I'll tell you what happened. The first time I ever seen a shootout was when Canada were playing Sweden in the Olympics for the gold medal. And at that time, each team had to select 5 players in the shootout. And Canada went first, and then Sweden, then Canada, then Sweden. And I'm watching, you know, because at that time, Gretzky was the first time he played in the Olympics, he's playing for Team Canada. So they get down, like, you know, to them. Nothing, 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 4 guys. So I say to myself, Well, Jesus, Gretzky's got to be the guy now because nobody scored. Well, Gretzky doesn't take the fifth shot. I think the coach forgot that he was in on the team or something. I don't know what happened. Anyway, the fifth guy taking the shot for Sweden, guess what? He scored and Sweden won the gold medal. I couldn't believe that. Now, first of all, I couldn't believe that you win a gold medal with a shootout. And second, I couldn't believe that Gretzky was not named by the coach to take a shot for Canada. I thought they were holding back maybe for the fifth shot, but he never took a shot. Named five guys before him. I couldn't believe it.
I mean, yeah.
So you must have thought the same thing when the Rangers left Gavrik sitting on the bench and Olli Jokinen takes that shot, right?
I was still waiting for him. Same spot as with Gretzky. I thought, oh, they're keeping him for the last. I thought the same thing then.
Yeah. I mean, it really was shocking. I mean, what a way to end it. I just hate that. It's like a film competition. It's a gimmick. I don't like gimmicks. Keep it the way it is, the way it was.
I know.
And the whole business.
Yeah, I mean... How can you go through 60 minutes and 5 minute overtime and then you're going to settle with a shootout? Like that's what it is for me. That's a gimmick. Absolutely, that's not hockey.
Okay, well, Emil, you know that whenever you're on the program with us, we like to surprise you. So, and we've done it again. We got one of your former players has joined us on the line. And I'm not going to say who it is. I'm going to let the caller speak, and maybe he could tell us a little story or something, and see if you could figure out who's on the line. So, surprise guest, welcome to Blue Shirt Banter Radio. And why don't you go ahead and see if you can give Emil a hint as to who you are?
Hello, Pat. It's your old friend, your defenseman, and friend from Kitchener. In fact, my mother reminded me yesterday that she had you at. In her house, which I didn't remember many years ago, for a feed of spare ribs.
You want me to tell you who that was?
Well, who is it?
Yeah.
Dave Maloney.
Oh.
Right?
No.
Better guess again, Ken.
We got to go a few years back.
You got the right city. It's Rod Seelig.
Rod Seelig.
Oh, for God's sake, you cut me, I'll tell you. Oh, damn it, you cut me real good. God, you sound like Dave Maloney, but how you doing there, Rod?
I'm great, thanks. How are you today?
All right, very good. Rod Seelig, a good, steady defenseman, I'll tell you, a workmanlike guy, and give you 100% all the time. Oh. Nice talking to you. How are you and your good wife and family?
We're great, thanks. Everybody's fine here, and... We're all doing well. How about you and your family?
Well, you know, I have a little bit of a problem, of course, with my wife, but, you know, she's got dementia. But hopefully, you know, they've kept it where it was, and if you can hold her where it's at now, then I think things will be pretty good, like, you know, considering everything.
Well, great. I was aware of Anne's issues, so I'm glad to hear that.
Right.
So anyway, Rod, we want to welcome you to the program. We appreciate you calling in tonight and helping us surprise Emil.
He sure did.
Rod, tell us what it was like to play for Emil all those years in New York.
Well, it was a treat to play for Emil. He brought some order and much-needed discipline to an organization that was sadly lacking that, and I think the results of that... Emil was an old Army man. He can tell you who his favorite Army person was, and his organization ran like one.
Now, Rod, this is Eddie. I wanted to say, welcome to the program. And when you came over to the Rangers, you came over in a big trade, and maybe, you know, Ranger fans don't remember that, but you were a prospect that was included in the deal that got that sent Andy Bathgate to Toronto, and some players coming over here, and Emil. I mean, first let me ask Emil. You were, I think, the assistant GM at the time. Did you engineer that blockbuster as well?
Oh yeah. Well, you know what had happened. I'd coach in golf, of course, and that's where all the players come out of the, you know, in that deal are all Toronto players. You know, come up through their organization like Rod Seelig and Bob Nevin and Dick Duflake on the. And Billy Collins and Arnie Brown. So they're all, you know, people that played in the OHA, people that I knew and I would say that for 2 years that I was assistant general manager, I wore out 2 suitcases. I think I seen every player that ever put on a pair of skates that played in the National League, American League, Western League, you name it. And that was my job to rate them all, like, you know, and get ready to do something when the time came. And we were ready with that deal with Toronto, I'll tell you. And we got the guys that we wanted, like, you know. The only one of the works that really didn't work out was Dick Duff. And it wasn't because of he wasn't a good player, because he was a real good player. But Dick Duff, like, you know, he had Toronto Maple Leafs always, I think, on his sleeve and in his heart, like, you know. And after he left us, right, he went to Montreal and he played good again. He was a great player in the playoffs, and it was just too bad. I think, you know, if we had been winning when he came, or just a little bit better, we probably wouldn't have had a problem. But Dick was a great player, and a Hall of Fame player. And all the others turned out real good for us. Rod and Arnie Brown were stalwarts on our defense for many years, and, of course, there was no better two-way hockey player than Bob Nevin, I'll tell you. And Nevin went on to become the Ranger captain. He was maybe the best two-way player I ever had.
Really? So, and Arnie Brown, again, he was a heck of a defenseman, too. Now,
oh,
Rod,
yeah.
When you,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Rod, when you come to the Rangers, I mean, you're coming out, you play for the Toronto Marlboros, you come to the Rangers, and don't they throw you right in the fire, so to speak, real fast?
Well, they did. It was a bit of a culture shock, to say the least, but it was a break in another respect for me, because it got me the NHL, I think, sooner than perhaps I might have stayed in Toronto. But I certainly enjoyed New York. It was it became a great place to play. It wasn't when I first got there, but once we started winning and built a winning tradition, and as Emil knows, winning bespeaks and gets you more winning, and you establish that culture. And we had some great teams there, and our record in terms of Stanley Cup should have been better than it was, but could have been Shittigans. Don't get you Stanley Cups, but we had great teams, and we had the best team for a number of years. We just didn't put it all together at the right time to win a Stanley Cup.
You know, speaking about Rod, I mean, I guess they'll never forget in Canada when they went on and beat the Russians, like, the first time they ever had that series, and Rod and Arnie Brown and John Rattel, Vic Hafey was there, came back before they got going in Russia, and Rod Gilbert. So that was an honor for those guys to play, and also an honor for the Rangers to have had 5 guys selected on that team to represent Canada.
Yes, and the big series there against the Rutgers.
Yeah, we still get together. That was a great series. And at the time, of course, we didn't realize how big it is. And if you're a Canadian, people still relate and tell you where they were that day and what they were doing. And in fact, we're very close. We still get together. In fact, we'll have all the players together, including Rod Gilbert, next September 1st here for our Angel Golf Tournament.
Oh,
okay. Rod, is it true that this may be the last reunion?
No, we get together every year. We have a golf tournament, and
I know that.
Together. In fact, we're starting to plan our 40th anniversary as we speak.
Oh, good for you. Good.
Yeah. Good. No, the team is it's grown in life, and it's hard to imagine. It's bigger than better, and recent cross-Canada survey, we're still ranked as number one in the country. So it's amazing how people that weren't even born at the time of the 72 Summit Series know about it, and still hold that dream and know the players and know all about the series. It's simply amazing.
Right.
Rod, you were a winger before you came into the NHL. Is that correct?
I played wing all my life, except for the last year I played junior. And the only reason that I played defense that year is that we were short defensemen, and I knew that at some part of the year they were going to ask me to play defense. And Jimmy Gregory was the coach of the team back then, and Buck Kuhl was the general manager, and Emil will know both of them very well. And I went to them and said, my suspicion is that you're going to be moving me, or asking me to move back to defense somewhere during the year anyway. Why don't we just start the year back there? And so I ended up playing defense the whole year and was playing defense at the time of the trade.
Hey, I got to tell you guys a funny one. You know, the Olympics are great. And, I mean, you get down to the finals between the U.S. and Canada. I mean, it's as good as you want to see. But the first game of the series, when the U.S., of course, beat Canada. So the next day I come to the golf course to have a game of golf. And all my friends are like, they're looking at me and says, oh, boy, you can't feel too good today, can you? I said, why? They said, well, Canada losing. I said, I feel great. I said, it's the only time ever that I've been involved in hockey I couldn't lose. They said, what do you mean you couldn't lose? I said, I have dual citizenship. So I shut those guys up quick.
Yes, I took a lot of heat. I took a lot of heat the next day as well, and I play golf every Sunday with a bunch of ex-pro athletes down in Florida, Sam McDowell being one of them, and Sam was on my pace pretty good, but somehow he was pretty quiet after the last game, and so it was a bit of relief, but it was great hockey, and I believe that the Olympics and having hockey in the Olympics is good for the sport, and I certainly hope that the NHL comes to its senses and doesn't overplay their hand and they do end up in Russia.
Well, you know, I started the first hockey school ever in the United States. It was back in about 1949, 1950 at the University of North Dakota. And when I look now to see just how far hockey has come along in this country, it's great, like, you know, it's a great opportunity, particularly for the young people here in this country, to further their careers, and some of them have now come up to the National League, which is really good.
Yeah. Well, it is a great game, and I think the spread of it across the U.S. Speaks to the what the game has to offer in terms of entertainment and competition and value for spectators.
Exactly.
Rod, who were you paired with on defense when you played with the Rangers?
I spent almost my entire career playing with Jimmy Nielsen. And so the Chief and I had
incidentally, I just
want
to tell
run.
You fellas something too about him. Rod, you may have heard, but your pal there, Jimmy Nielsen, was inducted into the Saskatchewan Hall of Fame about 2 weeks ago.
No, I wasn't aware of that, so I'll have to send him a note congratulating him. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was very nice. Like, you know, and they were a great, like Rod said, they played practically together the whole time. They were a very good pair of defensemen.
Now, Rod,
I was going to see Jimmy.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Amy.
Go ahead.
I was going to say,
so
Rod, Jimmy Nielsen was a kind of a, I don't know, kind of an enigma from what I've heard. I mean, I've talked to Eddie Jacquem about him. But can you explain maybe talk to what kind of, he always intrigues me, this guy. I cannot get a straight answer from anybody about Jimmy Nielsen and his personality. And Eddie Jacquem tells a great story about how he invited Jimmy Nielsen and his boys over to his house, and his boys showed up, and Jimmy's wife showed up, I think, but Jimmy didn't show up. So can you give us a little insight maybe on your longtime defense partner, Jim Nielsen?
Well, I think what you see with Jimmy is what you got, and you got a great performer, a great presence on the ice, and he was proud to be a Ranger, and he contributed what you see. I think he was a great teammate. We all have our foibles, and Jimmy, as well as any of us, have those, and that's part of life. But I have no doubt in my mind that Jimmy was a great contributor to the success of the Rangers, and he did all he could to, at all times, to have us win and be as good as we possibly could be.
And what was
the
difference?
You know, when you look at a player,
oh, go ahead, Amy.
If you look at a player, I judge him two things when I look at a player. I judge him by ability, and I judge a person by durability. And I'll tell you, that guy, he came to play, and he played hurt. Don't you think, Rod?
He certainly
didn't miss any games, I'll tell you. That's a feather in the cap, because defenseman, that's a tough position to play. You know, you're blocking shots, and, I mean, you're taking people out in front of the net. I mean, You can't let anybody stand around in front of the goal. I mean, you're working all the time out there, and it's a tough job being a defenseman. And you know, you come up with a lot of injuries, and Jimmy, he played through them, I'll tell you. And so he had ability, and he was durable too, which is important.
Yeah.
Now, just one more question towards Rod. Rod, who are the real tough guys? I mean, the guys, the real SOBs out in front of the net trying to clear. Who are some of the tougher guys you had to try to clear the crease with?
Well, there's a difference between SOBs and tough guys to clear.
Okay.
I think perhaps the toughest, or at least one of the toughest, I think, in the league during my career was Dan Maloney. And because Dan not only was tough, but he had some skill, and he had good hands. And you get a guy that's that big, you can't move him. You simply try and get position on him. But he and a guy like Kenny Hodge, very similar. When they planted themselves in front of the net, you weren't moving them. And the only way you're going to move them is take a penalty. So it was simply how are you going to try and neutralize him the best you could. And let your goalie be able to see what was coming through and keep him from tipping a puck or getting a rebound.
Yeah, Maloney's a great choice. He was a real good hockey player.
Now, Amy, when you took care of the defense and you spoke to the defense, what were some of the keys that you would tell a defenseman?
Pass the puck.
Well, move the puck and don't give it away because, you know, hockey games are not won or lost in the opposing end. They're lost in your own end. That first pass coming up has to be on that guy's stick who's breaking because they're all moving out and you throw that puck behind him or in his feet, well, you can trap the whole works of them, like, you know. So that's so important. And, of course, as a defense, you got to be able to skate backwards as fast as you can skate forwards because that's the toughest part of hockey is when they dump that puck in and they're usually sending two guys in after. You know, one guy's going to take you and the other guy's going to take the puck. So you have to have an eye in your behind to know who the hell's coming, you know, after you. And that's where a goalkeeper is so important because he's got to be letting you know who's coming and where you should go with that puck. And that's where Jockman was very good. Like, you know, I mean, he helped out his defenseman. And the defenseman helped the goalkeeper, but the goalkeeper's got to help the defenseman out too because he's back to the plate. And you've got to be really a good skater that you can skate backwards. Very important.
Now, Rod, I want to ask you, did you ever, in your time with the Rangers, did you ever get did you ever feel the wrath of Emil? Did he ever come down on you for something maybe? You got caught out late at night? That seems to be most
of the time. Yeah, not Rod, never.
He did find me one in an exhibition game. We were short defensemen, and he fined me for getting a misconduct because someone said something to the referee. The only problem was it wasn't me. But I still had to pay the fine.
So
I'll have to write a letter to the Rangers. Tell them to refund your fine.
How much was the fine?
With interest. It was $100. That was a lot of money back in those days.
We can get up a collection.
Wow.
Yeah.
You were a disciplinary. You were fining these guys $100, Emil? That was a lot of money.
Well, yeah, we had team rules. the only guy that I had all through the years that was never fined and we couldn't catch him was John Rattel. Couldn't catch him not wearing a tie. Couldn't catch him doing anything that you could fine him. And we tried, but we never caught him.
I wanted to real quick. I know, Emil. I know you're familiar with Jay Moran. He's an author. He wrote the book about the Rangers Bruins rivalry back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And he had asked if he could call in, and I wanted to bring him in real quick. He wanted to say hello to you guys. So let's welcome back to Blue Shirt Banner Radio, Jay Moran. Jay, I appreciate you holding for so long. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Hey. Oh, great to have me on. Great show. Love listening. Hi, Mr. Francis, Mr. Sealing. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
How you doing, Jay?
Good. Hey, I got a
Jay did a lot of work in that book, I'll tell you.
Oh, that was fun, though. Couldn't have done it without the interviews. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Good.
You mentioned before about the draft. How did Toronto not protect Brad Park? And so you selected him in 66, but then Boston had the first pick, and they picked Barry Gibbs, and they didn't pick Park.
That's right. Well, I'm glad Toronto had the choice, you know, protect him or not, and I don't know why. That's a good question, and I didn't even ask. I didn't want to find out. We had him, and that was good enough for me.
Yeah, and then if Boston had taken Park, they would have had Park and Orr at the same time. Wow.
Oh, yes. Tell me about that.
let's see. In the 69 draft, Philadelphia picked some player that never even made it into the league in the first round. You had two picks. You picked Andre Dupont, Pierre Jarre, and then finally in the second round, Philadelphia picked Bobby Clark. Bobby Clark had diabetes scare you off from picking him?
Yeah, absolutely. I went out there myself to see him play, and I really liked him. I didn't realize at the time, until we got into our final meetings with our scouts, we had to get ready for the draft, that he'd had that, And what we should have done, if we'd have known sooner probably, because none of us knew about diabetes. We should have gone through our medical staff. And we'd have found out maybe that was controllable. As it turned out, it probably helped him because he had to look after himself and, so much better and maybe more than anybody else. Instead of being at a loss because of his strength and what have you, I think that by looking after himself the way he did, and he became a stronger player, and he sure as heck didn't hurt his performance, I'll tell you. He played as much or longer than anybody. Yeah, I think that all of us blew that, other than Philadelphia. They're the ones that picked him.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had a chance to pick him, and nobody did until he came to Philadelphia.
Yep. Oh, he could have helped you. Mr. Stanley, I looked up in the New York Times, your first game with New York. It was back on March 4th, 1964. Chicago came in. Glenn Hall, Jacques Plante in goal. Not too bad, not too shabby there. 19 years old, and you got an assist in your first game. I don't know how much you remember of the game.
I actually remember quite a bit.
Hmm.
In fact, what I remember most about the game was flying into New York and taking a taxi to Madison Square Garden to the game and reminding the taxi driver that we were passing the United Nations for the second time. Could we please go to Madison Square Garden?
See, I thought people were more honest back in that day. I guess not.
Oh, he was an anomaly.
Yeah. I have a note that Eric Nesterenko elbowed you, which was, I guess, a welcome to the league. He was one of the tough guys back then. But that allowed Dick Duff, who we were talking about before, to score a goal, go-ahead goal. Any thoughts on Nesterenko?
Well, actually, as I recall, I actually played against Nesterenko before. I'd played the year before a number of games in NHL with the Maple Leafs, so I think I recall that it was, and that's where I got my first goal there, so against Glenn Hall. So I was familiar with the Blackhawks, and of course playing in junior hockey in Toronto, and I got to see and knew a lot of the NHL players, and I'd been to Leafs camp a number of years, so had a lot of experience with NHL players and some exhibition games. So I wasn't nervous. In fact, I can remember running into taking Moose Vasco into the boards and coming back to the bench, and one of the Ranger players who should go unnamed and say, "Don't you know he just hit you? Better watch yourself there." And I said, I don't think there's anything to worry about with Moose, so. But it was a memorable night because obviously having been traded to New York in your first game there, it's something to always will remember and remember the crowd and the old garden. There was a lot of bad things about the old garden, but there were a lot of good things about the old garden, and the crowd being on top of you and when they were for you, it was a great place to play.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how about I'm sorry, Jay, but maybe both of you guys can address what was, like you were just talking about, what was the bad? Let's go with the bad. Let's start off with the negative first and get to the good. What was bad about the Old Garden?
Emil, you want me to go?
I can't Emil, think anything really bad about it other than the fact that if you're a good skater, it was a hindrance to you because the ice surface was smaller there than the 200 by 85 feet that's mandatory you have now. Like the Boston Garden and Madison Square Garden are the exact same size. So the same architect, the building is practically both the same, like, you know. But I would say that if you had a good skating club, and the Rangers usually had pretty good skating clubs and more finesse players than goons, like, you know. And I would say that that probably was the determinant of the team itself, like, you know. The worst thing about Madison Square Garden, it's easy for me to say, it wasn't the garden itself, it was a practice rink. It was a rink up on the fifth floor, and it was built for fancy skating. It had tin boards, and the lake was kind of on one end. If you're a goalkeeper, you couldn't see the puck if you happened to be in the opposite end. And if you're a backup goalkeeper, that's where they put you, like, you know. And you couldn't practice a power play properly. You couldn't practice killing penalties. You sure as hell couldn't scrimmage because if a guy touched the boards with his skates, he lost his edge, and the guy would have to take your skate down five flights of steps to get to where they sharpen the skate and get your blade back. So it was impossible to practice there, and that's the first thing I did. I said, we're getting out of here. This is lousy. You know what I mean? There's no way you could get your team ready to play in that facility they had upstairs.
Well, I would agree with Emil about the size of the ice, but the other two things that I would add, and it was a New York problem, not just at the old garden, the new garden, was the ice. But the other thing in not practicing there a lot, or very seldom, was not knowing the boards. Other teams could use the boards to their advantage. We didn't have that advantage because, quite frankly, when you played in the garden, it was mighty, except for the crowd, it was like playing another away game. It was you didn't even know you couldn't take advantage of your own rink, and I think that was a great disadvantage, and still is to the New York teams because you just don't go to practice in your own arena, and I think that during the course of a year is going to hurt you and cost you points during the course of a year.
And if you remember at the old garden, how the surface of the ice was three barrels. And the ice wouldn't be over an hour, the ice was out of there. You know, we never ever practiced there because I had so many different events going and basketball and what have you. So anyway, we went to the new garden, so I said, well, we got to figure out a way to get better ice in here. So I got a Zamboni. Bought a Zamboni for $58,000. So we moved into the new garden middle of February. We play about three games, and this fourth game we're in there, like, oh, I keep saying to myself, how come it's taking so long? How come it's taking so long? So I run out, and I look, and here, three guys in Madison Square Garden, they're pushing the three little barrels around, like, you know? I'm thinking to myself, what the hell's going on here? Well, I couldn't question anybody then at that point in time because we were getting ready to go on the ice for the next period, and I was coaching too. So the game ended, and I'm through the press, and down I go to the room where all the laborers room, like, you know, where they shower and change and what have you, and I walked by this $58,000 Zamboni sitting there, you know. I walked in the room, and Joey Mullen's dad was in charge of the coop. I turned to him. I said, what's going on here? $58,000 Zamboni, and you guys are pushing those little barrels around. So they look at one another, and finally Joe's dad looks at me and says, nobody knows how to drive it. I never thought for a minute, you know. But I never thought that Dunham knew how to drive a Zamboni, so I had to bring a guy in from Canada, Jimmy Youngrod. And I had him train these guys to drive the Zamboni, and then I made him our equipment manager, and he stayed on with us for many years after. But, here we had a Zamboni. Nobody knew how to drive it. And I couldn't drive it, that's for sure.
Emil, what an operation you walked into. I got to tell you, what were they doing there before you came along? I mean, unbelievable.
Well, I have to say, Lester Patrick had to be some guy because they won a couple Stanley Cups.
And Rob,
and Emil, you were telling us.
Go ahead. Jim,
oh well, I just want to. Emil, you were telling us a story that one of the other times you were on about how you told the Rangers or you told the NHL or that you didn't care if you played at 10 o'clock at night, you had to play at home, right?
Well, that was because of the playoffs. Like, you know, I was called up to the Rangers as a backup goalkeeper in 1950. Chuck Rayner was the only carried one goalkeeper then, but they brought me up there the last month of the season I was with them because they always sort of wanted two goalkeepers, you know. But anyway, the first two games with the Montreal Canadiens was played at the Garden, and we never seen New York again for over a month. We went to Montreal and played three games there, and the Rangers knocked out Montreal. Then we went to Toronto and had to sit and wait for the Detroit Maple Leafs series to end. And then a seven-game series went in overtime, and feedback had got the winning goal. But five games were played in Detroit, including the seventh and final game, and two games were played in Toronto, and that was supposed to be the Rangers' home ice. Well, I never, you know, having been there and seen all this, you know, I had never seen anything so unfair in my life. It wasn't fair for the players. It wasn't fair for the fans. So when I was given the opportunity to take over the Rangers, I told Bill James, I said, under one condition, we have to have all the games. We're going to be in the playoffs. I'm not worried about that. But we want all those playoff games that we're entitled to. Or otherwise, I'm not interested. He said, well, he says, we will check that out and see what we can do. And he came back a couple of days later. He said, well, we had a check with the circus, and they have a contract with us, and they have to have three performances a day all through April and in the first 2 weeks in May. So he said the only thing that they would agree to, we could play, but you'd have to play at 9 o'clock at night. I said, that's better than playing in the five games in Detroit and two in Toronto. I said, we'll take that. And that's what we had to play at 9 o'clock from then on, so they could have the three performances, like, you know. Oh, talking about Ice Hooch Rod brought up, I got to tell you this one. Maybe I told you when I was telling you the story about our rivalry with Boston. We lost a great defenseman. Well, we lost Brad Park twice when he went back to get the puck. The ice was lousy. He went into the boards and tore up his knee and had to finish the season, like, you know, wearing one of those big braces and what have you. And Dale Roth was going down the left side of the boards. Nobody near him. He went to turn, make a sharp turn, went into the boards. Compound fracture. Well, they brought him out right in front of me at the bench, and his foot was turned backwards. I'll tell you, it'd make you sick. But anyway, I blew my cork after the game because I knew, you know, I knew when I see him go out there. Well, we definitely lost him for the season. I didn't know maybe that was the last game he played, and it was, like, you know. So anyway, I'm talking to the press after, and I said, you know, I can't believe this. I said, we've had three major injuries in this building because of this ice. I said, I've seen better ice on the highways in Saskatchewan where I come from. Well, needless to say, that coat pushed in all the papers, and the next day, Mr. Irving Felt, the chairman of the board of Madison Square Garden, called me. He says, you insulted Madison Square Garden. I said, yeah. And I said, we lost a hell of a hockey player, and we lost Park within the last 3-4 years twice on account of that ice. And I said, if you don't believe me, Mr. Felt, as you go to Saskatchewan right now, go out there in January, February, you'll see if I'm not right. Ice on the highways is better than what you got at Madison Square Garden. Well, he didn't appreciate it, and he hung the phone up. Well, that's fine. I got my word in there, too.
That did end Dale Ralph's career, too. Yeah, that injury.
That's right. It was the end of his career. You're right. And you can ask Rod about him. He was playing real good hockey for us, I'll tell you. Very good defenseman, could really skate, and, I mean, that was just like, you know, finished him.
Mr. Francis, we should ask you about the second trade involving Rod Sealing. St. Louis actually claimed him in the draft, and then you had to give up four players to get him back, but I think it was a prearranged deal. You can tell us about that.
That's right. Well, they used to call St. Louis New York Rangers South. Mm-hmm. You know, We always had a problem coming into drafts, like, you know, and rather than letting players go for $30,000, we were better off, like, you know, to make the type of deals that we did. And always when I let a player, when I, which I shouldn't tell anybody, I guess, but when I made deals with St. Louis, the player I sent there, I always had the option that they couldn't trade him anywhere without first offering back to me. But we did that to protect ourselves, and we weren't losing players for $30,000. We were getting either the player back, or we're getting draft choices, like, you know. And draft choices are worth a lot more than $30,000. And that's why I made a lot of deals with St. Louis, because they would be agreeable to such deals and terms of the deal.
Hey, you thought highly of Rod Sealing, because St. Louis got four starters out of it, Bob Plager and Tim Edelstone.
Yeah.
Trade.
Well, I'd rather go that way than lose Rod Sealing. So it was a way of making deals. There's a deal that I regretted, but at the time he had a very serious injury, and they got fooled by it, or they wouldn't have traded him. And I got fooled by it because, I had a chance to take him back, but he had a serious concussion, and that was Moose Dupont. I'd sent him there to begin with, but with that right of recall, if you want to call it, they couldn't trade him without offering back to me, and he'd got hurt very bad in St. Louis, and he was out for 2-3 months, and he'd had a bad concussion, and they were going to trade him to Philadelphia. They had a deal set up, but they had to call me first, I said, go ahead and trade him, because I wasn't going to give up, a couple, three guys to get him back. But he went on and had a great career in Philadelphia. He was a good defenseman, and he was young, when all this happened,
Yeah, good player.
Yeah, it was funny because I remember, at reading the Ranger yearbooks as a teenager, and you go through, the draft picks and the players that have played on the team, and I'd be like, now I'm talking like 1978, I'd be looking at the book, and I'd go, Andre Dupont, we had him? And I go, why don't we have him now? And now finally I'm 45 years old, and now I found out.
Yeah, right.
So I finally got my answer.
It was like a safety valve, You only could protect so many guys, and these other guys would be available for $30,000. You can't put $30,000 on the ace, so you're better off to have somebody you can deal with where you can shift them over, and then if need be, you can get him back if they try to move him. If he stays, that's fine, because sooner or later when you're dealing with St. Louis, you always knew that you're going to get a chance to get that guy back. Because they usually didn't stay too long with the Solomons.
Jay, did you have any more questions for Emil or Rod?
Yeah, one question. For both, actually. Referee Lloyd Gilmore passed away last week, and he was always colorful. Didn't know that, really. Oh, I just wondered if you had any thoughts about him. He was the ref when Vic Hatfield threw Bernie Parent's mask into the stands in the Toronto playoffs in 71. Big incident.
Right.
But any thoughts on him?
Go ahead, Rod. I got a couple of them. Go ahead, Rod.
I thought Lloyd was a very good referee. To me, a good referee was one who was consistent in his calls, and Lloyd was always consistent. So his interpretation of the rules didn't vary from game to game, and so you knew what the rules were, you knew what he was going to call, and you could talk to Lloyd. I was aware that Lloyd died the other week out in British Columbia, but my heart goes out to his family. But I thought Lloyd was one of the better referees of his time because of the fact that he was fair, but he was consistent.
Hmm. Yeah, you're exactly right. Plus the fact, I'll never forget him because he was a referee in the game in Philadelphia against the Russians, the last game in the United States. And you remember they pulled the team off the ice. And Clarence Campbell was sitting in front of me. And was sitting in front of me, he got up out of his seat. And when he seen the Russian team leaving, he left, So he come back, and he turned to me. They'll be back shortly. I said, good, because you'd hate heck for the game to end, what had happened. They were guaranteed all expenses plus $25,000 a game. That was their eighth game, so it was $200,000 hanging in the balance. So he told me, he said, you got 3 minutes to get back on the ice, or you forfeit the $200,000 you got coming. They were smart enough, they hadn't paid them. They weren't going to pay them, it was all over. And you've seen the Russians come back real quick.
Yeah, that always cracks me up because, they're communists, the whole thing. But it's the same thing happened when they played in Philly, when they walked out. Once they said, guess what, you're not getting paid.
Well, that's the game I'm talking about.
Well, that's the game you're talking about. Yeah, like you said, all of a sudden, they're running out on the ice, skating down the ice. The money speaks even to them.
You could be sure.
Eddie and Jim, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
No problem.
Hey, we were talking about trades. Mr. Francis was traded for some big names. He was traded to the Rangers from Chicago for a guy, Sugar Jim Henry. Doesn't ring a bell, but he won 29 games as a rookie, and that was a record held for 64 years, broken by some guy named Lundqvist. And then he was traded to Cleveland in the AHL for some guy named Johnny Bauer. So some big names there.
Wow. Emil, you're involved with some big names.
Yeah, well, that year, it was funny how it worked. Gump Worsley was a rookie with the New York Rangers. He won the Calder Cup. And I was in Vancouver, and I won the Most Valuable Player. I won low goals, all the awards like you know that you had. I won three of them, first All-Star and what have you. And Johnny Barr was with Cleveland Barons, and they won the American League Championship. So guess what happened? Barr went from Cleveland to New York. Gump Worsley, who won the Rookie of the Year, was sent from New York to Vancouver, and I was sent from Vancouver to Cleveland. They just took the three of us and just spun us all the way around, like, you know. I think they did that because that way none of us could come back to training camp and ask for a raise. There was a method in their madness, I'm sure.
All right, I'm just going to hang on, guys. Yeah, I'm going to listen on the phone for the rest of the show, but thanks for having me on.
Okay, Jay, I'll put you back on hold.
Nice talking to you again.
Thanks, Jay.
Great talking.
Bye, Jay.
Okay, that was Jay Moran. I wish I could. Eddie, I don't remember the name of the book. The End of a Rivalry?
I think
so.
Yes. I could reach for it.
Rangers Bruins,
not too far away,
End of a Rivalry.
Yes, yeah. Okay. And I know he did a lot of interviews, especially with players that were part of that rivalry. So we appreciate Jay calling in. Well, one of the questions I had for you, Rod, was about was when the Rangers traded you and then got you back from St. Louis. So Jay blew that question for me. That's okay.
The only thing that Emil did mention is that he called me and told me in advance it was going to happen. He said, don't worry. He says, you'll be back in New York for training camp. So, which he was true to his word.
Now,
paper job.
Then, Rod, you got claimed by the Capitals in 1974 in another expansion draft. Is that correct?
No. I'll let Emil say. Let's just say that I had a few words to say about the New York fans after some what I thought were unfair way I was being treated. And I didn't care for about myself. It was what happening and the impact it was having on my family. So the media printed my comments, which had a certain word or two in them, and Emil put me on waivers shortly thereafter, and I was claimed by Washington, and they called me and said, we've claimed you, and they said, don't bring your family down. I said, don't worry, I had no intention to bring my family to Washington. They didn't know the rules. They thought they had to keep me for 2 weeks, but before they traded me to Toronto. So, I'll let Emil, he may want to add whatever he wants to, but it was something that I needed to do. I don't regret what I said, and I needed to protect my family, and I stood up for them.
We can talk turkey. We can talk, you know, it's not going to ruffle any feathers.
It won't bother me.
Okay, well, go ahead, because, we keep it real, so to speak, to use the vernacular at the time. Let us know what happened, because, frankly, most of us, including myself, really need to be educated about the history of the Rangers. So even if it's negative, and just to speak to what you might say, it's funny because when you first came here, the Ranger fans were very tough on Alan Stanley. They were very tough on Harry Howell. I mean, these are guys who are great players. And for some reason, if you didn't hit and weren't a bruiser on defensemen, as a defenseman, they were all over you. So, listen, there were a lot of dummy Ranger fans out there. We know it. None that listen to this program, but there are some dummies. So maybe just speak frankly, and if Emil wants to add something in, we'll go for that too.
Well, I think I've said my piece. As I said, I had some words about the fans, and I understand what happened. I'm a big boy. I was a big boy. I knew what was likely going to happen, and it did happen. But I needed to say it, and I wasn't prepared to see my family. When your boys, I had two boys at that point, and when they start bearing the brunt of what their father does, it's time for you to do something.
Right. Yeah. Well, that family is first. I mean, listen, and those bad apples. Anyway, so Emil, can you speak to that?
Well, I mean, I don't really know what happened, like, you know, as far as what Rod may have said or he didn't say. I mean, I don't recall that at all, but the only thing I can recall, I know what had happened, like, you know, why it happened. I mean, that's part of hockey. That's part of changes that you make when you're running a team, and we probably got stocked up with defensemen, and we made the move, like, you know, and Rosen, I didn't think he had the ability or lost any ability, because after I left New York, I went to St. Louis. I got Rod again to come play for me in St. Louis, because that's how much I thought of him as a defenseman, so that's all I can tell you. If I didn't like him, I thought he was through, I'd have never brought him back to St. Louis with me, which I did. And he helped us in St. Louis, too.
Let's put it this way. I never held it against Emil for what he did, because I really forced his hand. And I knew exactly what I was doing, but as I said, I needed to protect my family, and there needed to be a change, and there was a change, so I have no regrets. My regret is the fact that we didn't win a Stanley Cup in New York when we should have. And as I said, could have, should have, would have, don't pitch or anything. But that's the only regret I've ever had about being a Ranger, is that we didn't get to the ultimate goal, and we certainly were capable of doing it. But again, it's not always the best team that wins. It's the team that's playing the best. And for a lot of reasons, injuries, bad luck, and, of course, a guy named number four Orr had a lot to do with it over those course of the years, too.
Right, exactly.
Well, we got even with them, but it was too late. They beat us out for the Stanley Cup, and the next year we beat them out in five games, including three games right in the Boston Garden. But that's like a day late and a dollar short.
We had a history. We did that every year. We always managed to beat the Stanley Cup champion the next year. The problem is we never did it before.
Unreal.
You would have counted, but
yeah,
and that's life.
Day late, a dollar short, Rod.
That's right.
So you play with Emil in St. Louis. He reacquires you, and then you end your career. Now, a lot of fans don't know about this, but the Atlanta Flames was quite an organization, and not in a good way. Their building was, not in the best part of town. Do you have any memories of playing in Atlanta, Rod, that kind of stick out?
I do. Atlanta had a great team. In fact, let me tell you how I got there. When I went to St. Louis, I was a free agent, and obviously I was in Toronto, and I wanted to stay in Toronto. But I was in the horse business here. I had a farm, and I actually was prepared to take a sizable pay cut to stay in Toronto, but they had that wonderful owner of the time, Harold Ballard, I had finished baling hay one Saturday afternoon and went into town after I got cleaned up and came back with the Toronto Star, and Milt Donnell or Jimmy Proudfoot had written a column about how the fact that I would play in Toronto for any price. And I said to my wife, I'd read the paper, but looked at the sports before I came home, and I showed my wife, and I said, I just played my last game in Toto. She said, why? I haven't talked to anybody, not a soul. So I said, this dies cast. So anyway, I get to do a deal with Emil, and he wanted me to sign a four-year contract, and I said, no, we'll sign three. And if you want me to play and I want to play, we'll figure out a fourth way. Well, at the beginning of the third year, I went to Emil and said, Emil, I'm going to retire at the end of the year. Don't protect me and lose one of your good players. I'm prepared, to if someone picks me up in waivers, let me go. So he said, thanks very much, sit tight. I'll look after you. And partway through the year, he made a deal with Cliff Fletcher in Atlanta, picked up half my salary, and I went to Atlanta. And quite frankly, Atlanta was a great place to play. We had a great team, and we had any discipline at all. We could have gone a long ways. But if you look at the players we had there, we had goaltending, we had defense, we had scoring, and we were the toughest team in the league, bar none. I could go into Philadelphia, in the height of the Broad Street Bullies, and turn my back to the play, and there wouldn't be a soul that would touch me, because there were eight players on that team that were tougher than any Philadelphia Flyer. But
that team is really the prototypical big team when teams started to draft bigger players. I mean, you had guys like Willie Plett on that team. Yeah.
Kurt Bennett, Kenny Houston.
Kurt Bennett,
like
Kenny Houston.
Pat Ribble.
Eric Vail. Eric Vail, another guy who was a big guy.
Harold Philippoff. All heavyweights and all could play to varying degrees.
Yeah, that's right.
Guy Chouinard, 50 goals that year, 107 points.
Yeah.
McMillan, 108 points. You're right. But, you know, from what I've heard, though, from, you know, from reading books, that the Omni itself was kind of in a rundown area.
It was right across the street from the it was in a major complex that had a shopping center,
yeah,
hotel.
Yeah, a big shopping center, yeah.
Had
oh,
a skating
yeah.
rink there right in there.
There was nothing wrong with the Omni.
No, it was across the street from the Atlanta
Convention
Center.
Wasn't
Tom
Lysak in that team, too?
Yep,
Tommy Lysak, Guy Chouinard, and Bobby McMillan
yeah.
were our three centers.
Sure.
We had a great team. We just had no discipline.
Yeah.
And when it came to playoffs, and everything tightens up, we couldn't tighten up because you can't turn that tap on and turn it off, and it was unfortunate.
Yeah,
we
right.
drew well. I mean, the only reason that the Atlanta Flames disappeared was that the Cousin brothers, who went bankrupt, had to sell and raise some cash to pay off creditors. They owned both the Hawks and the Flames, and the Flames were the most readable, cash-ready asset they had, and Calgary was sitting there. And look,
okay.
was it 2 years later, they go to Calgary, and they win the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
I guess I stand corrected on that. So that it, you know, because I just remember the Rangers. I think the next year the Rangers, or was it two? I think it might have been the next year the Rangers played Atlanta in the playoffs. Fred Chiro's second year, and the Rangers beat the Flames, and that was the last game at the Omni. Actually, in that series when the Rangers eliminated them. So it's good to hear that. You know, things weren't as dismal as they've been painted in books as far as Atlanta goes. So, and I really think they were responsible for teams starting to get bigger.
Well, they certainly were the prototype for what teams look like today.
Right.
They were strong down the middle, had good size in the wings, and good goaltending, and actually not bad defense.
Yeah, I mean, you had Dan Bouchard, Reggie Lemelin, your goalies. I mean, you guys are...
No, Dan Bouchard and Phil Mir were the two goaltenders.
Oh,
Mir,
Phil
yeah.
Mir.
Yeah.
And now, I would be remiss. We have one of our listeners, Jeff, is from Kitchener, Ontario, and he wanted me to... He said, please mention to Rod that he is from Kitchener and he remembers you, or at least knows. I don't think he remembers you. He's a little too young for that. But your head coaching days with the Kitchener Rangers.
Well, I only coached there for half a year. They fired the coach and approached me, would I coach? And I said I would finish out the year, but I would only do it on the basis that they wouldn't trade any of their young players. They had a very young team and they had historically. Traded away much of the young talent to get some older players who would move on and they'd get in the playoffs, lose the first round and get anywhere. So I had that agreement with them and they for the most part held true to it, except I came in one day and the general manager at that time, Mike Penny, who Amir will know quite well, said, I got to talk to you. I said, I can't talk to you right now. I need to get on the ice. I can't be late for practice. I don't allow my players to be late, so as a coach can't be late either. So now I have to talk to you. So I go in to see him, and he said, I just made a trade. And I said, what do you mean just made a trade? We had a deal, no trades. Well, he said, but I got Paul Coffey. I said, five Paul Coffeys won't get us into the playoffs. You broke your word. Anyway, Paul came and played, and Paul was a great talent. But he's actually written a book, incorrectly stating I told him he'd never make the NHL. What I did tell him was that, and Emil will know quite well. Emil drafted a player named Bobby Hess in St. Louis, who had Paul Coffey talent.
Good friend of Ron Greschner, by the way.
Well, no, but when I finish the story, you'll understand. Bob, and when I went to St. Louis, Emil made me, said, you're rooming with him. You're going to teach him. After 3 months, I went to Emil. I said, I can continue to room with Bob, but I said, there's no teaching. He simply didn't want to know anything about playing defense. All he was interested in was getting the puck. And he had a great pair of legs. He had a great shot, except that when the other team got the puck, which happens once or twice in hockey, problems happen. And that was my message to Paul. And quite frankly, to Paul's credit, he did learn to become a good defenseman. And to me, that's what made him what he was, his ability to finally recognize that. And that's all I was trying to do when I had him in Kitchener, was have him understand that at some point in time, the other team needs to get the puck, and we'll get the puck in, and you have to at least be able to play. You have to be able to fake at least you can play defense.
Right, exactly. But that's funny how you got misquoted in the book about Paul Coffey and now it's, you know. So I'm
Should
glad
happen.
You cleared it up on this program, because we're going out to millions here, Rod. You don't understand it. Well, no, I'm serious. They're not millions. Well, there are thousands at least. And we got a chat room that's going on, and I just want to throw – I'm going to let Jim rejoin this. I feel like I'm hogging you guys, but we have a chat room that goes on while this goes on, and everybody is talking about right now Walt Tkachuk. Can you both – Walt Tkachuk is a guy I think is very underrated in Ranger memories and Ranger annals. Can you guys first with Emil speak about Walter and then you, Rod?
I'll let Emil go first.
Well, I'll tell you, Waller is the same old adage that you got to be strong down the middle. And when we got him, we got extra strong down the middle. I mean, he was one of the best two-way centers you ever want to see. When you put Billy Fairbairn along with Waller Tkachuk.
Oh, yeah, I remember that story, Emil.
Hell of a combination you ever want to see, like, you know. And then, heck, you, Steve Vickers come along before that, Dave Ballone, they're all 20-goal scorers, 30-goal scorers. I'll never forget Waller. It was after we had a Buffalo player. We had a working agreement with Buffalo. We had one of their players, like, you know, die on the ice about 2 minutes into the first shift, first time he stepped on the ice. They owned six players of their own, and they asked if they could bring him our camp, which they did. And we give them all medicals the day before, the next morning. He was on the ice about two minutes, and he dropped dead right there. So from then on, we all started to give extensive medicals, like, you know. And we brought an eye doctor in, and after he was all through, I would sit down with him. He'd go over the list. Like, he didn't know names. He just had numbers. This guy needs this. This guy needs that, like, you know. And he came to Waller's. I think he was 16. Or no. Was he 16, Rod? I never paid attention to numbers. Anyway, the number he said was Waller.
18.
And he said, you have a player number so-and-so, he can't see. And he said, he's got to have contacts or glasses. And I says, we'll just leave him the way he is. Because the way he runs over people, I don't want him to start to see. Because he would hit and hurt people, I'll tell you. I remember one year we played Toronto in the playoffs, and Bobby Bond, remember him, eh, Rod? He said that Tkachuk hit him so much that his hair was even sore. I mean, when he hit, he hurt. He was a good, good two-way hockey player, boy, I'll tell you. Take a Waller Tkachuk. Oh, I got to tell you. Well, Rod says, Tkachuk. Well, here's what happened. He'd been with us for about 9 years with the Rangers, but he'd also been with our Kitchener team for 4 years, you know, our sponsor club, playing junior. So every Monday, we had to have a press conference, and I'd take a player who had done something extra that week and bring him with me to the press conference. So I introduce Waller Tkachuk, and he gets up there. Mr. Francis, he says, you don't pronounce my name Tkachuk. The right pronunciation is Tkachuk. I said, really? As I've known you for 13 years, you should have corrected me 13 years ago. You're Tkachuk then, you're Tkachuk now, you'd be Tkachuk to me forever. Here's some guy.
Well, I would tell you that I think Walter was the prototype number two center in the NHL in those days. He could score. He could check. He was tough. In fact, I remember us playing in Atlanta, the Rangers playing in Atlanta, and Ronnie Harris was playing for the Flames in those days. And he was a pretty good hitter, a pretty good open-ice hitter. And after sitting on the bench, we were watching. and one of us said, watch this. Ronnie had thought he'd caught Walter with his head down, and Walter never missed a step. He just skated right over him, and Ronnie Harris had to crawl on all fours back to the Flames bench. That's how hard he hit him.
Wow.
He used to drive Esposito nuts, didn't he?
He did.
I always put paycheck out against him. Esposito hated him.
Really? And he was a fire player. He was a guy, and you're right, he was good on face-offs. He was a great checker later on in his career when I really, you know, a lot of people forget the guy could put the puck in the net. Guys my age caught him towards the end of his career where he was more of a checking center. And it's funny that you were talking about his eye, Emil, and he wound up, his career ended because of an eye injury.
Yeah.
You know, and,
yeah, too bad, yeah.
Yeah. And so now, Ron, your brother Rick played some hockey. How's he doing? How's he holding up? How's it going for him? He's fine.
He ended his career because of an eye injury as well. In fact, he should have retired right after the eye injury. He called me after he got a stick in the eye, follow through, and and I knew when he was calling me, he said, I need to talk to you. I said, I'm not sure you really want to talk to me. I said, no, I need to. And so I advised him at that point. I said, I don't think he should play anymore. I knew he had 10% vision in the one eye. And so he went back and played. And we'd be going through the airport and run into another team. And they say, we played Buffalo last night. Did your brother ever get hit? And I'd say, I bet the guy came from the left side. He said, how do you know? I said, because he's blind. He can't see anybody coming from that side. So he was never the player he once was. And Scotty then sent him off to Detroit and played there for a year. But essentially his career was done. But he's in good health. Everything's good. He had open heart surgery 2 years ago to correct a small problem that from birth. But he's come through that great. And I see him every once in a while. And things are fine with him. He's living in Rochester, working for a bank, and life's good for him.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear that. Because he actually played
New York?
Pardon me?
Rochester?
Rochester, New York, right?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, okay.
And he was a pretty good goal scorer in his time. Yeah, I mean, he had a couple 30-goal seasons around there.
He was a very good two-way player. He could put the puck in the net, but they used him in a checking role for most of his career in Buffalo. But he had good bare hands, and he could skate. I love playing against him. He'd come down against me, and I would just laugh at him and say, you might as well pass the puck if you're not getting around me. He would just...
Rod, you still follow the game closely?
I do. I have, I live in Kitchener now, but we've always lived in the GTA since I retired, and I have access to the games in Toronto. I don't go that often, but with television, you can see a whole lot of hockey today, so I keep in contact with it, and I'm pleased with the new rule changes. I was somewhat disappointed. I thought that they had some slippage during the playoffs last year with the interference and stuff like that, which to me takes away from skill. And I think the great thing about hockey is it's a skill game, and without skill, it just becomes another contest.
That's an interesting take. Most, I would say, veterans of the NHL from the old days don't like the new rules, but you're saying that you kind of embrace the fact that skill will win the day with these new rules. I mean, what do you think? Me and Emil and Jim were talking about the the shootout. I mean, what do you think about that?
I'm neutral on it. I understand what they're trying to do. I heard Emil earlier on when I was waiting for you to cue me in that I think that one of the things today is that no one today's fan wants to see a winner, and they don't want to see ties are like kissing your sister to a lot of fans in sports today. So I understand the desire to create a winner, and it's exciting in some respects. For regular season, people aren't prepared to sit there for 3 hours. They want to get in, get out, and get on with their life. And time is at a premium for everybody today. So I'm ambivalent. If they wanted to go back the other way, for me, it wouldn't bother me. But I understand the motives behind it. Whether I agree or not agree, it really doesn't make anything. To me, though, going back to the new rules, I'm hoping that they don't slip because, as I said, hockey's a skill game, and if you allow interference and hooking, that does take the skill away, and skill is what, to me, makes hockey great and what will keep the game great.
And, Emil, well, I think you've spoken to this. I mean, what do you think about
it? Oh, yeah. No, I don't like that shootout at all. I think it's a gimmick, like, you know. You play 60 minutes, 5 minutes of overtime, and then you go in a shootout, like, you know. And, hey, I'm not surprised what happened. I was surprised that it would cost the Rangers probably a spot maybe in the playoffs by losing in the shootout. That was a shocker. But, like I said, the first time I ever seen a shootout was in the Olympics when Canada played Sweden. I couldn't believe that, you know. It's the first time I'd ever seen it cost Canada a gold medal.
Now,
well, on that, it's interesting. Last week, the NHL, their rules committee and whoever else, it was Brendan Shanahan, who works for the league now, were trying a number of possible new rule variations, I guess you might want to call, here in Toronto. One of them, actually was in the overtime that they would, if after I think 3 minutes or 2 minutes of overtime on 4-4, if there was still tied, they moved to 3-3, trying to get it down to a point where that you would. I think the aim was to get away from the shootout. So be interesting to see what they do. The one thing that I think just by reading the reports that. There will be a variation of the no-touch icing, which I think is long overdue in the NHL.
That I agree with wholeheartedly. This is too many
having watched and having been rammed into the boards by a forward who wouldn't do the same thing to your face is long overdue. There's been too many careers ended, too many injuries that last longer into your life when you're done playing hockey that have resulted from that, and for no reason that... and whether it be international or junior hockey, they've had no-touch icing for eons, and it hasn't ruined the game one iota.
Okay.
You know, it's funny somebody hasn't got killed. I mean, that's right. They got to stop that. Like, you know, before all this taking the red line out and what have you, if the puck was shot in, one defense would go back to the puck, and his partner, like, you know, would have a chance of taking the forecheck out to give his partner a chance to get back. No, I mean, you can't touch anybody. You just go by those. If you touch them, you're going to get a penalty for interference. But they'll get somebody killed. They don't change that. Stiffen up something on that, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Emil, Rod, we've come to just about the end of our show. We thank you both for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. And Emil, Emil, we want to wish you an early happy birthday and many, many more, my friend.
Very good. Okay. Nice being with you guys. Nice seeing you in the here from you, Rod.
Thank you, Emil. All the best to you and your family, and give them my best regards, and from both Sharon and I.
Yeah, say hello to your good wife for me, Rod.
Will do. Thanks
bye
very
now.
Much. Bye.
Take care, Emil. Right, bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Bye.
All right.
There you go.
The great Emil Francis and Rod Sealing joining us here on Blue Shirt Banner Radio. And, you know, we've said this to you guys before. You know, these guys aren't going to be around forever, so, you know, we need to soak it all in while we can and make sure you pick up books like 100 Ranger Greats and the End of a Rivalry, the 72 the Bruins and Rangers, because, you know, we got to preserve the history, Eddie. I think that's part of why we're here.
Well, I really want to know what the heck, what did he actually say in the papers that, or the fan said to him that he wanted out of New York. Now, we know there was one person who could answer that question, but he's no longer with us, is John Halligan. And
right.
Maybe some Ranger fan can remember or research what was said in that article that he wanted out of New York. They apparently attacked his family. He, you know, he's a class act, Rod, and he didn't, you know, we, you know, 30, 40, 40 years later, we'll still not talk about it. But,
it,
you know,
it was
listen,
an uncomfortable. It was an uncomfortable subject, that's for sure.
Yeah, you know, and but I always figure I have to dig because, and like you said, these dudes are not going to be around. I mean, you know, I hope they're around forever. But the reality is, Emil's 84. I mean, you know, and he's as lucid as hell. He's more lucid than I am, and. There's not going to be any more ways of finding out this stuff. So, yeah, it can get boring when they start talking about, you know, whatever. But between that are such great nuggets of information you can take if you're interested in the history of the Rangers. Because where else are you going to hear it? You're not going to hear it here. And I mean, I don't want to toot our own horn, but, I mean, it's great that these guys come on free of charge. Sometimes it's a little. You do a lot more lately on corralling these guys, which it takes a little bit of that. You know, it's a little bit of work, but they're fantastic. And you know, as Ranger fans, we got to appreciate. Although we don't have much winning, there were some good teams the Rangers had. Not you know, and some great players who loved playing in New York. And most of them will always say they loved. You know, this was the rare guy that we had on that. Had some problems later on playing in New York. So, listen, that's a tough town. We're going to be brutal, fans. You know it. We call a spade, so to speak, here. And, you know, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to soft soap anything. You can't fool a New Yorker. You can't fool a Ranger fan. That's for sure. Although MSG continues to, you know, feed you freaking pablum and their little bit of Kool-Aid all the time. And I see a lot of, fans are clamoring for the Ranger roll call. How about we do that real quick, Jimmy, if you can cue up the music, if you think that's prudent at this time.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't you go ahead and let me just, first of all, anybody that's, you guys that have been on hold, sorry we didn't take phone calls tonight. We're just about out of time. Why don't you go ahead and do the roll call, but
you think I'll be done? If not, we'll just
do it without the music. I can't.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Blue Shirt Banner Radio Roll Call. I'm your host for this roll call, Eddie the Mouse Geist. The first guy on my list is Andrew SFL. Andrew is a supreme hockey card collector who is accused of sleeping in the chat room. Andrew doesn't like to type. He likes to listen and look at his newly acquired hockey cards that he will throw in my face later on another website. Avery Rules. Well, we all know Sean Avery Rules, and Sean Avery Rules because he is one of the funniest mofos that I have ever ran into. And he will be joining us with a new impersonation in the coming week. So look forward to that. City Hockey Fever. He comes from the city known as Hockey. That's right. Hockey Town, Detroit, Michigan. City Hockey Fever. No, he's not from Detroit, but he's got a fever. And then there's Cohen Hockey, who likes to bike around the parts of New York and New Jersey. Cohen Hockey. Also going to be known next week as Cohen Bicycling. And then cut a TML, Jeff from Kitchener, Ontario. Jeff, I told you, I promised you I would tell Rod Schilling about Kitchener, and I did. Frosty, Anthony, oh, Tony does it again. Frosty, one of the coolest characters. Frosty, get it? Coolest characters ever to grace this great stage. And then there's Jackie Lamba, Henrik, the Quanquist number one fan, and Yarmer Yager is our hockey husband. Jackie Lamba, best chant
mine
ever
too.
Was what?
My okay. Hockey husband too.
Your hockey husband too. Jackie Lamba, who once called Dan Girardi from her seats, and I heard I was right there, a candy ass. and there's Yach 68. Kind of weird that Lamba's favorite player is Yach 68, and Yach 68's a female. Maybe some girl-on-girl action, perhaps, in this chat room. Day of the Dead, Jason, we love you. You're opinionated. You're constipated. We love you. The great man, who started Jim's rant off by, once again, provoking more controversy. Mario M., the crazy, well, he's not crazy. Mario M., the feisty Cuban. Those crazy Cubans, you know, they imported them from Florida, as Emil Francis said. Mr. French from Family Affairs, Sebastian Cabot, we love you. The number one Ranger fan, who I'm not supposed to identify, so I don't know why. I think everybody knows who he is. Phoenix Ranger, love Phoenix, love the Rangers, so hey, we're in agreement, let's move on. Ranger Crisis, that's me. Ranger Dude is Zach. Zach's also a guy who likes to get on that bicycle, so to speak. Maybe he'll pedal himself back to civilization. Last I heard, he was in Philadelphia. And then Rock 1193, the always opinionated, always constipated. Oh, I said that. Rock is a frequent contributor here on the phones, and we love Rock. He's a great Ranger fan and a quality human being. Stan from Bayside. Stan, we love you. Stan's been with us since the beginning, and why, I don't know. The Mad Macedonian, apparently a friend of the great Kotze. Great Kotze. We love Kotze. Not so sure on the Mad Macedonian. I'm only kidding, Mad Macedonian. You're a hell of an individual. And Walker, New York Ranger, another long-time listener of the show. We welcome you. And as we end this show with the Ranger Blue Shirt Banner Radio roll call.
We're off the air.
There we go. These people with this roll call, they kill me.
I think that's the reason half of them come, is to hear their name on the radio.
Well, as long as they come, we don't really care.
That's right.
I had to
promise that next week the roll call will be in the middle of the show. I told them we got no guests next week. We'll get back to normal. We'll take calls. We'll let people bitch. And so.
Well, listen, you know, we do this for us. So frig them.
That's right.
Exactly. Now, what is going on over there at Casa de Schmiedeberg?
All is well. All is well. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to put it on the podcast.
Okay. All right.
It'll be fine. So,
okay.
What did you think of Rod Steeling?
We're in a podcast. Well, he's not going to the podcast. I thought he was good. I think he was a little guarded. I thought he was a little bit not all that loose, but he's 65. I mean, how loose can you be?
Right. I know they can't all be Emil.
Yeah. I did think that Emil was a little bit cheesed. We cut him off. I don't know about that. I don't know.
What?
He didn't
what,
like
you mean
old.
That we said that we let him go before the show was over?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm well. Just... I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. They're very sensitive.
Yeah. It's 10 o'clock. He's got to go to bed and... I was out of topics with him tonight. You know, we'll get him on a couple of months and fire him up again. I'm sure he's
when the hockey's going on, we could talk about something that's going on because he watches the games. But he repeated two stories as it was.
Yeah, I will say this about Rod Steeling. He is the first. He's the first guest. And I'm understandably so because of the way it ended. But he's the first guest that didn't have that affinity for play. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the guys that we have on, they were so grateful to be a Ranger and just loved it. And I didn't get that vibe from him. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like to him, it was just I played for the Rangers. Sorry we didn't win a cup. And then we played, and then I was in Atlanta, and that was great. And I was in Toronto, and that was, he didn't, like Pat LaFontaine, it really meant something to him to be a Ranger. I didn't get that vibe off of Rod. That's not, I can understand that,
He sounded more excited to play for the Flames than the Rangers.
Oh, yeah, okay, so it wasn't just me picking that up, right?
Yeah. No, you're right.
I mean,
you're right,
White. You're right, White. So, anyway,
yeah,
it was a good show. It was a good show.
It's good. Another one for the annals. Put it in the bank. It's a good show. Yeah, no, I liked it. I think when I got out a little out of gas at the end, well, you know, certain people.
So, sorry for my rant at the top of the show.
Also, do you and Jim have I'm going to say Andrew SFL.
What is this?
Andrew SFL sent me a private message through our hockey card website.
Oh.
Like, you and Jim have a fantasy hockey league in the work for BB this year. I'd like to take part if a spot's available. I have an idea for the league champion. How about the Brad Park annual slab? I would donate the piece, and it could be passed along each season to the overall fantasy winner. Instead of the cup, the banner could have the slab.
They did one last year, and, you know, quite honestly, I got involved in it, got all excited about it, and then, like, 2 weeks into it, I didn't have time to maintain it. I think Joe or Nick, I'm sure one of them would be glad to do it again if I asked them. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at this slab.
I would trust a whole bunch of people on the internet to pass this slab around year after year, but hey, if he wants to donate it, you know.
Yeah, I looked at it. It's pretty good. It's autograph of Brad Park on like an actual slab. So it's pretty
cool.
Yeah. We'll see. Maybe we'll get like just a chat room one going or something. You know, like a guy hanging around on Facebook. Because I trust those people more than I trust. Because Blue Shirt Banner includes like, you know, people.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know them as intimately, as it were. So, anyway.
All right, my friend.
All right.
Hugs and kisses, and I hope you feel better. Don't let the douchebags get you down, man. That's just the internet. In a couple of days, it'll be forgotten about, and that'll be it.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. So, are you, if you're going to do a Friday night show? I was asked that three times tonight.
I'm no good for Friday. Yeah, I'm pretty much done with that show, so you feel free to do your show that, frankly, gets so much more recognition than mine ever did. I'm a little jealous.
Why are you done with it? You were so much better at it.
Nah, I don't know. I'm just, like, not into the...
I didn't steal, like, your thunder, and now you don't want to do it anymore, did I?
No. I was tired of doing two shows a week. That's what it was.
Oh.
It was funny. I guess I'll tell you this on the phone. But, when we talk next, remind me to talk about what Eva said to me. Okay?
Eva? I'll call you when we hang up. I'll hang up the podcast. I'll call you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.